KXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. Israel says it's launched extensive new ground operations in the Gaza Strip. Palestinian officials say airstrikes have killed at least 103 people, including dozens of children. Here's CBS's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
The army said it was the beginning of a large-scale offensive in Gaza. Military sources said the move follows a week of intensified airstrikes during which hundreds of Hamas targets were hit. They said dozens of Hamas fighters had been killed, and the Israeli forces are taking control of key terrain across Gaza.
President Trump is expected to talk with Russia's leader tomorrow morning about Ukraine. That follows talks between Vice President Vance, Secretary of State Rubio, and Ukraine's President Zelensky in Rome today. Special envoy Steve Witkoff on ABC's This Week.
We have to get to a final peace deal, and the president has a force of personality that is unmatched. I think it's important. His sensibilities are that he's got to get on the phone with President Putin.
Rubio and Vance led a U.S. delegation attending the new Pope's installation and first mass. CBS's Sabina Castelfranco.
During his inaugural mass in St. Peter's Square, attended by tens of thousands of people, Pope Leo XIV urged unity. He said he would like to see our first great desire to be for a united church, a sign of unity and communion, which becomes a leaven for a reconciled world. Sabina Castelfranco, CBS News, Rome.
The vice president was busy. He also met with the leaders of Italy and the European Union.
We have some disagreements, as friends sometimes do, on issues like trade. And we also have many agreements and many things that we can work on together.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says many trading partners are negotiating tariff agreements in good faith, but he says those who don't will face a presumption of higher tariffs. As the NTSB investigates last night's tall ship collision with the Brooklyn Bridge, we're hearing audio of the first New York Fire Department radio calls, courtesy of Broadcastify.
Looks like a sailboat was going under the Brooklyn Bridge. Hit something over there with the mast broken off. Is drifting under the Manhattan Bridge with people on the boat.
Falling debris from the tall masts is blamed for two deaths and 19 injuries among the Mexican crew. Officials say an early report had the ship's pilot saying that there was a loss of power and control. Talks aimed at ending an engineer's strike were due to resume today as New Jersey Transit commuters brace for another day or more without their trains. The engineers want higher pay. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and data shows Wisconsin kids are in crisis. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
The report from the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health shows the numbers have increased dramatically over the past 10 years. While rates of anxiety, depression, self-harm, and suicidal thoughts went up across the board, girls saw an overall higher increase. Wisconsin boys, however, are 2 to 4 times more likely to die by suicide than girls, according to the report. Amy Marsman says these trends are worse for LGBTQ plus students and students of color.
They feel less connected to their school and less likely to report that they feel they belong at their school. So we know that there are target populations that we should really focus on.
Marsman says teens are also getting less sleep than ever before, which is foundational to their mental health. More than 20% of teens reported self-harm and nearly 25% of girls reported seriously considering suicide, according to the report. Marsman says factors like rising food insecurity, particularly among students of color, also play a significant role. She says additional support during the pandemic helped to eliminate food insecurity gaps, but now Black kids in Wisconsin are 5 times more likely to be hungry than white kids.
Some of these everyday situations really impact youth mental health, whether you're getting enough sleep, whether you are getting enough to eat, whether there's financial stability in your household. All of those are factors, and they are disproportionately impacting kids of color.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mix of clouds and sunshine around the area today. A light north breeze at highs in the upper 50s. Overnight, it gets a little frosty. Partly cloudy skies and temperatures dropping to the middle 30s. On Monday, partly sunny skies. Highs approaching 60. Right now, it's 51.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look back at the weekend, including the state Republican convention with our friends at Wisconsin Watch and State Senator Royce on the Joint Finance Committee budget process. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, Wausau's home for the Todd Alba Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Rational Revolution. I am most certainly not Mark Becker. I am Jerry Bader sitting in, Pastor Jerry Bader. Heavy emphasis on the Pastor Jerry Bader to make a differentiation of a radio Jerry Bader you may have known a lifetime ago that doesn't exist. And it is weird and exciting to be in a radio studio again, in that order. Weird and exciting. And Mark's on vacation. And Mark specifically asked me to step in to talk about something that is going on in my ministry. I'm pastor at Samaritan's Heart Mission Church, and there's not going to be a lot of preacher talk, I promise. I didn't say none. I said there wouldn't be a lot. And one of the things that we have done recently is started, I am calling it a new ministry or a new effort, a peer support group called, ours is called Peace, Parents Empowered After Child Estrangement. And we are affiliated with PLACE, Parents Living After Adult Child Estrangement. And we had our first meeting on May 8th, and it was powerful. It was emotional. It was difficult. But in advance of that, I promoted this effort. And by the way, I probably should quick get my backstory in. My wife and I, our daughter, 4 years ago when she was 28, walked out of our lives with a text. And there, contrary to what a lot of haters on Facebook said, no, there was no advance warning. There were no conversations. She was just gone. And it was that experience that brought me to Brian Briscoe. I read about him in the New York Times last year. Brian, as I mentioned, started PLACE, Parents Living After Child Estrangement. When his daughter exited their life, he and his wife, and in 2022, and this year was tweaked to double back and track down Brian in that story. Connected with him on the day I connected with him, he was holding a Zoom to talk with others who wanted to start this type of in-person. Brian's support group is entirely virtual. We're looking at in-person, and through, quite frankly, Brian's mentorship and tutelage, we made that happen on May 8th. So when Mark asked me to fill in, I reached out to Brian. I said, this is a great opportunity, and Mark, you know, saw everything on Facebook, all the hate, all the vitriol, and you know, this is an opportunity to talk about it. So joining me now from Texas is Brian Briscoe. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good morning. Fine. Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. You and I, of course, have talked a lot about this. February 26th, believe it or not, is when we first connected. So it's several months already. We've been talking about this. Brian, I very quickly told a little bit of your story. Talk about, you know, a couple of minutes, your personal experience and how that led to PLACE.
Sure. I suppose it was late August or September of 2022 when my daughter departed with a note. And of course, there's a lot more to that. But in the ensuing 5 or 6 months, I had a real emotional downward spiral. And I was rather shocked at the dearth of available services locally. I sought counselors, I sought peer support, and there wasn't any such thing. And, you know, as a counselor by profession, you know, I've started any number of programs for, you know, drug and alcohol treatment centers, for law enforcement. And I thought, okay, well, I guess this is to be considered marching orders. I've started programs before. Let's start one now. And it started with a pretty awkward TikTok live. We'd had a spring storm. We had no power. I rented a cheap hotel room so that I could have internet, had a TikTok live event, 700 participants. And I thought, okay, wow. We're onto something. Yeah.
Yeah. And you and I have talked about this and you know, there are numbers out there anywhere from 27% to 40%. I actually believe in terms of families impacted, I believe it's higher than that. And certainly we have seen that, you know, and quite frankly, the, you know, I posted this on my own social media, on the church social media, but then I also posted it on two large Green Bay focused groups and did a video, about a 4-minute video explaining this, Brian, and that got thousands, probably got 10,000 views by now, I don't know, but just it generated so much hate. And the theme was that it is accepted as fact that parents are always responsible. No sane adult child is going to leave just, you know, cavalierly without valid reason. So if your child left you, it's your fault. Is that one of the things you address, that perception? Do you address that in place?
I do. And we encounter that quite a bit. And, you know, if you work in this field, if you're a mental health professional, if you've seen a counselor, you may be familiar with the fact that we make note of absolutes. If someone sits in session and says, this always happens, this never happens. Well, there's, you know, an emotional fallout from that. The same thing. It doesn't even withstand fundamental scrutiny to say, well, here are 27 people in a group and all of you are abusers and monsters. Mm. Now, just for a moment, if I put out some clarion call, all right, we're having monsters and abusers are us. Everybody come on down. What's the likelihood that I could successfully gather exclusively a group of such people? It really doesn't make much sense. Now, let me just plant a little seed here. Hmm. I don't plan to spend our time exclusively on the defensive.
Right, right.
They have a perspective. Something got them here. Some bad experience. This is their reality. And I don't mean to negate that at all. If somebody's angry at me on social media, in the rare instances in which I've engaged, I've thought, well, I don't think they're doing this out of meanness. This is pain. It may be projection, but this starts from someplace that they right. feel is legitimate.
Yeah. And I would, and I agree with you that that's not where we're going to take the bulk of the time, but I do want to say this is, you know, in our ministry, and I know you're familiar with this, hurt people hurt people. Healed people, heal people, and free people, free people. What I would say to those folks, many of them who have estranged from their parents, you may be liberated from your parents, but I didn't hear a lot of freedom. I didn't hear a lot of free people, people that were free from pain and hurt. And that breaks my heart. I actually feel for them. So I wanted to get that out there, and I may say that in another venue as well. So let's now get to, so you form place. And I don't know if I've ever asked you this question. Maybe I have, or maybe you answered it. It's virtual. Was there any reason you didn't start brick and mortar that in person, or was it just a matter of logistics?
Oh my gosh. If I may be painfully honest, this is an idea, a need, a demand. This succeeds in spite of me, not because of me. I'm a lot of things. I'm not a good promoter. Anybody who's seen my social media will understand that. I had an offer of a venue or two, and my efforts at, you know, putting people in seats just didn't gain traction.
Okay.
And it's as simple as that. I probably could still make it happen if I had any competence in that area, but virtually there was a flood of people. I mean, you know, really initially far more than I could handle. So that kind of took care of itself.
And so there you go. And so talk about what does happen at Place. I'm sure there's no such thing, because I know what happened our first night. I know there's no such thing as a typical session. But if you, a general idea of what you are trying to accomplish, how you're trying to help people at Place.
Yes, thank you. You know, I've run a lot of groups in my career, and Place is especially rewarding. Place, running groups is like raising children. You know, surface level, you can say, well, it's the same thing again and again, but it's not. Our groups, literally from group to group, 1 week, everybody, it appears, is angry. 1 week, people want to talk about practical matters such as wills and estates. 1 week, they're talking about their needs regarding social support. 1 week, they're talking about how's my health and is my current health state a result of what's going on, or has it factored into this? It's as if each group has its own personality, its own dynamic. A common complaint we got early on was that we were echo chambers and we did nothing but complain. And in the last group, I said, okay, complain if you want to. But we do so much more than that. We have limited avenues for this. If I'm sitting in the barber's chair talking to my best friend and I want to talk about this, even the people who love you most really seem to be capable of pretty limited engagement on this topic. So we perhaps are a pretty rare avenue for getting it out, for processing, for venting. But we do far more than complain. We've had estate attorneys guest with us to explain the practicalities of what to do with your will, your trust, et cetera, et cetera. We cover a wide range of stuff.
So yours, and you and I really haven't had a chance to talk about that. So, and again, that's the perception from the outside that folks had, that it would just be a gripe session. And on our first night, Brian, be clear, there were people who came to be very critical of their children, and I talked about that and how we navigate that. But it's something that it's funny that Ramona and I, my wife Ramona, haven't really talked about that, because we have dealt with those practicality matters. If the child you're estranged from, if you had made them the executor of your will and power of attorney of something, okay, now that's probably not a practicality. So a couple minutes in this segment, how much of that, because I never really thought about that, how much is that become more and more frequent, those type of life after the child, you know, navigation?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, the practical stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of similarity between estrangement and addiction. The addict may take on a drug or alcohol habit and say, it's my choice. I know what I'm doing. This affects only me. And there are these concentric ripples of influence and consequence that occur afterwards. We have people in groups saying, I'm still paying for their cell phone, or they may not know their health insurance has ended, or I got a notice that they got a traffic ticket. It came here. From little stuff like that to, you know, I got it. One of them, I think, got a notice that their child's college scholarship had a problem. And of course, there's stuff with wills and estates. And exactly like you said, this was the executor, and now this child has estranged. What do we do about it?
All right. I'm Jerry Bader with Brian Briscoe, and we are talking about child family estrangement, rational revolution.
Get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal.
Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Matinee on air.
Corrine Hendrickson, she owns a daycare center.
We're doing this day without childcare. What we do is we talk about what would happen, what would it look like if we didn't have childcare. But we also talk about what could it be? What can we do to change the system? I love all the protests. I love all the people speaking out against things. But we also need to participate in democracy by saying what we want and what we need and talk to our reps that way. So that's what this event is all about.
Catch Matinee on air at its new time. Weekday mornings, 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Child abuse is not a bad parent problem.
And the causes may be different than you think.
You see, paid family leave,
that prevents child abuse.
And high-quality, affordable child care
prevents child abuse, too.
Prevent Child Abuse America promotes programs and resources informed by science that help communities, parents, and kids thrive.
Because when we keep families out of crisis,
we prevent child abuse
from ever happening.
Go to PreventChildAbuse.org to learn more.
Let's solve child abuse before it ever happens.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says, body's too old.
Pastor Jerry Bader in for Mark Becker, Rational Revolution. I thank Mark. Boy, it is just still really weird to be in a radio studio. I don't think I forgot how to do this, so that's kind of cool. And talking with Brian Briscoe, who has become a friend, and he is the founder of Parents Living After Child Estrangement. I latched onto that in 2024 from a New York Times article several years after our daughter, at 28 at the time, now nearly 32, estranged from us. And in the last segment, Brian and I were talking about some of the blowback that these groups get, and then some of the practical things. And I want to just walk through. You created a list of 12 principles, Brian, and anyone who has been in a support group, recovery support group, are familiar. Most have some type of 12 principles. But I think you did an outstanding job with these, and I want to walk through just some of them. We are grounded in a set of guiding principles that shape our time together. There is life during estrangement, and we intend to live that life, which that statement assumes that some people aren't. I mean, that some people really got stuck, right, in that moment. Talk about that.
Oh, yes. You know, there's a phrase from dialectical behavior therapy, which was created by Marsha Linehan. It's a term called radical acceptance. And it's basically saying, in our grief, in our ambiguous grief, it is in our best interest to accept, like it or not, this is our reality. And that's a pivotal point, because people can get stuck in the, this is wrong, this shouldn't have happened. And they're kind of constantly in that mental, you know, movie in their minds about what happened and what didn't happen. And that leaves them, you know, stewing in, you know, resentments and how unfair it is. And if we can at least work on radical acceptance and say, like it or not, this has occurred, it's where I am, and the sun keeps rising, I keep getting out of bed, what do I do with this post-estrangement life? It serves us better.
So one of the things that we got up here in Green Bay with peace, Parents Empowered After Child Estrangement, some folks were surprised, almost kind of asked the why aren't you about reconciliation? How do you answer that question if you ever got that?
To be quite transparent, when I came into this in March of 2023, I hired some folks to help me, and right out of the gate, really some sharp minds around me said, you're a counselor, now you're the expert in this. Let's go. And I thought, I'm very much not the expert in this. And in fact, at that point, I was becoming familiar, especially with Joshua Coleman. And I thought, this is the authority. He's got that covered. If you want good guidance, go to Dr. Joshua Coleman. His Rules of Estrangement book is fantastic. It was clear to me in that moment, there isn't enough regarding people's need to cope. That was an unmet need. And I'm simply here to roll up my sleeves and get down to the business of getting through this day. I don't have the magic that allows you. I don't know the magic that allows you to reconcile with your child. I read his book. I occasionally speak to him about it, but I feel my place in this is coping.
And, so near the end of our session, and the first, I'll tell you, Brian, our first session basically was, you know, there were 15 of us representing 17 with Ramona and me, representing 11 families. And near what I basically did is let them talk. And a lot of them, Brian, had never said this out loud to anyone. So it was it's going to be different going forward. And I told them that, but I didn't really have much of a stopwatch, and hour and a half going around and letting them do that. Near the end, then when we wrapped up, was, you know, the goal is to live that life and have peace. And this woman tearing up said, is that really possible? Are you telling me this can really happen? And I'm going to be candid. I would give myself an F minus. I just wasn't prepared. And I said, yes, it can, because I didn't know what else to say. If you were, I need a teacher here. What, Brian, would you have done in that situation?
I like to do what we call rolling with resistance. You know, there are holes in every game, every philosophy, every martial arts technique. There's a weakness somewhere. And when somebody says a thing that you're not prepared for, go with it. Oh, I hear what you're saying. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And in fact, you as a mother, well, now that we're talking about it, surely much of your identity to this point has been built upon being a mother. And with that gone, who are you? What are you? How can you proceed? And with any luck, you have an example to pull from. You, in the moment, have somebody else jumping in to offer words of encouragement, something that is practical, something to try. We don't have any magic. We don't have any advice across the board, but we'll keep throwing what we can at this. And we find here and there that things do work and things help.
Jerry Bader in for Mark Becker, talking with Brian Briscoe, founder of Parents Living After Child Estrangement. And Brian helped us found at Samaritan's Heart Mission Church in Green Bay, Peace, Parents Empowered After Child Estrangement. Another one of your guiding principles, we seek accountability, not blame. Make the distinction between the two.
Well, blame comes with an emotional component. Blame comes with, you know, I'm angry. This is your fault. It can come with hate, vitriol. You know, I had a client not long ago beautifully say that hate is like a room that's on fire and you've chosen to open the door. And when you introduce that into the process of trying to figure that out, it colors everything. If we can remove ourselves at all, if we can put any emotional distance between us and the business of connecting the dots, we do a far better job. And that process is accountability. Okay, this accounts for that. This caused that. This is how these are connected. And it helps us understand if we could try, and I know that's a lofty goal. If we could try to do this and keep our, you know, negative emotional responses out of it.
Just under 2 minutes in this segment. One of the next ones, we offer support, not advice. And same thing, distinction. What does support look like? What does advice look like?
Oh, support is validating, hearing, processing together. Support is beautiful. Advice is a slippery slope because what works for me might be a poor fit for you. If I have blanket advice, let's go back to, say, estates and wills and such. My advice is you do this. Well, there's so much variation from situation to situation, state to state, and certainly so many variations among our clientele, whether it be race, socioeconomic status, number of children, adopted children, is there substance abuse in the mix? Is there mental health pathology, either for the parents or the children? Blanket advice does us all a disservice.
Talking with Brian Briscoe, founder of Parents Living After Child Estrangement, on Rational Revolution, and Pastor Jerry Bader in for Mark Becker. In our next segment, we do not indulge in denial. And one of the things I noticed at our first session was buckets and buckets of shame. And we'll get to that straight ahead.
We'll have more coming up in just a bit on The Silent Epidemic with Pastor Jerry Bader and Brian Briscoe. But stand by for a special interview with Mark Becker and Senator Tammy Baldwin next on The Rational Revolution. You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
CBS News brief. Investigators have just said they've identified the suspect in yesterday's bombing of a fertility clinic in Palm Springs, and they believe he was the person killed in the explosion. The FBI's Akil Davis.
This is an intentional act of terrorism.
New indications that an end to the fighting in Gaza is nowhere near happening. CBS's Linda Gradstein is in Jerusalem.
Israel said it launched a new ground offensive in Gaza despite indirect talks with Hamas on a temporary ceasefire.
President Trump is due to speak with Russia's Vladimir Putin tomorrow morning about ending the war in Ukraine. Special envoy Steve Witkoff on ABC's This Week.
If he can't do it, then nobody can. So I leave it to the two leaders to have that call.
The NTSB continues its investigation into last night's tall ship collision with New York's Brooklyn Bridge. Falling debris from the ship's masts blamed for two deaths and 19 injuries among the Mexican crew. CBS News Brief. I'm Peter King.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Another challenging year for the Badgers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College football. A report out this weekend says the Wisconsin Badgers will be lucky to finish 500 this season. Last year they went 5-7. And this year's schedule, not any easier. Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, and an improved Indiana program. Most odds makers have the Wisconsin Badgers with another 5-7 record this fall. Baseball. The Brewers losing to the Twins last night, 7-0. Milwaukee with just three hits. The Twins have won 13 in a row and haven't allowed a scored run in 33 innings, a new franchise record. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
It's kind of indicative of how much they care, to be quite honest with you. I know people might not understand that. They care a great deal. They want to get it right. We faced a really good pitcher who was really good tonight.
The Twins' Pablo Lopez allowing just two hits in six innings. That series wrapping up today from AmFam Field with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mix of clouds and sunshine around the area today. A light north breeze at highs in the upper 50s. Overnight, it gets a little frosty, partly cloudy skies, and temperatures dropping to the middle 30s. On Monday, partly sunny skies, highs approaching 60. It's 53 at our studios.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. After the election of liberal-leaning Justice Janet Prosewitz in 2023, Wisconsin State Assembly and Senate maps were challenged in the Wisconsin Supreme Court and subsequently thrown out as unconstitutional. But justices passed on a challenge to the congressional districts. With April's election of liberal Justice Susan Crawford, pro-voter groups are trying again for a fairer congressional voting map. In early 2024, the legislature ignored six fairer maps and adopted Democratic Governor Tony Evers' least change compromise map, later allowed to stand by the U.S. Supreme Court. GOP candidates were elected to six of eight congressional districts with only 50% of the statewide vote in 2024. Two challenges were filed May 7th and 8th, one by the Elias Group, contending that the Least Change Directive had no basis in the Wisconsin Constitution, and the second by the Campaign Legal Center, argues that Evers' map ignored traditional redistricting norms, splits too many counties, and didn't equally apportion the districts. A record $100 million was spent by both sides in the recent Wisconsin Supreme Court race. The current margin in the U.S. House is 220 Republicans to 213 Democrats. We've linked to the filings and local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Alba Show.
I'm as guilty as anybody about this, not talking to real people in person. I'm sorry, I don't believe that texting or video conferencing or any other of that jazz can supplement one-on-one interaction. We as humans need other humans. We need to connect to people. So anyway, that's the public service announcement to start off the week. Get outside and talk to real live humans. You'll feel better.
Catch the Todd Alba Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Pat Kreitlow.
Pat's still on vacation, but he returns soon, we promise. But for now, we have the return of Bach and the Doc. Dr. Kristen Lierley sits in the big chair, and we go over all the news from the weekend. Join us.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. We got a break in your programming to bring you an amazing, amazing guest, your friend and mine, who needs no introduction, Senator Tammy Baldwin. Hello.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
Welcome back. It's so good to see you and to talk to you again. How's everything going? Like, that's a loaded question.
Well, I will tell you that we were warned by Steve Bannon, Steve Miller, the Steves, as I call them, who advised President Trump, that we should expect them to flood the zone.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I think we've all been experiencing. And, you know, when you're being flooded, it's, you know, you have to first tread water and then you have to get your, you got to get into your swing. And I think we're getting there. But boy, it has been quite the first 100 days, and which I would characterize a lot as broken promises. Because as we know, Donald Trump, he was on the campaign trail. He's like, on day one, I'm going to lower costs. On day one, I'm going to end all wars. On day one, I'm going to do all of this. And not only has he sort of betrayed those promises and the people, but he's in many cases, in a calculated way, done just the opposite, especially on costs with his trade wars and tariffs and that sort of thing. So, I mean, where to begin? But it has been a lot of broken promises.
I was, you know, that was, I don't have a ton of notes because I knew it was going to, like, I knew it was going to be bad, but did you really, I didn't know it was going to be this bad. Did you?
No, I did not know it was going to be this bad. And I had a sense of what flood the zone meant, right? That we would see in rapid succession all sorts of announcements and nominations and executive orders and proposals. And but just the sheer volume and, you know, the fact that, you know, we've seen more executive orders signed in the first 100 days than any other president by a big factor, not just, you know, he beat the second place one by three executive orders, right?
And, right.
And we've seen it's like a 24/7 thing. Also, we always used to joke about the announcements that would be made in government after work on a Friday.
It was take out the trash.
Didn't want to get any media attention because doesn't everyone go home at Friday? You know, on Friday evening, and then they have the weekend, right? The type of major announcements that we were hearing on Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. And I think of so many of them, you know, I try to get home every weekend when I can after session, get back to Wisconsin and travel around the state. And the things I would hear about when I was back in the state, and people would be saying, you know, what do you mean they're going to cut these research dollars to our universities? What do you mean that they're going to freeze federal funding? And there's no one to call back in Washington to say, you know, Secretary Kennedy, what do you mean when they say that people can't access their Head Start dollars? Yeah. Can they open on Monday or not? And it has been a sort of combination of this steady flurry, including in non-business hours, and also in many ways an intentional stonewalling of information.
Yeah.
So I'm on two different committees that oversee some aspect of the Health and Human Services Department. And, you know, they announced that they're going to fire hundreds of scientists. Can we get any information at all about what divisions or agencies they're being fired at? Is it all on NIH? Can we get any information when the city of Milwaukee, which is conferring with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention about lead levels in their public schools? Can we get any information when they call over there and they can't respond because they have fired every lead expert in that office? And these are just little, you know, there's hundreds of these examples. And it's it's more than frustrating because it's downright harmful and cruel.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I talked to a woman named Christina Dry, and she was worked for USAID. And she was like the big speechwriter and communications person. And the stories that she said on this program about what happened, and they were the first agency that went through this. And the standing on the global stage is gone. You know, in the first 100 days, Donald Trump has tanked virtually every major market in the world. And, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of jobs being cut. And we're less safe on everything from storm forecasting to travel to cybersecurity. What can Democrats do about it?
Well, we have to fight on all fronts. And so I'll start with my alliteration.
Yeah.
When they violate the Constitution, when they violate the law, we got to fight in the courts.
Yeah.
And there's over 200 cases right now on almost every illegal thing that he's done.
Good.
And you know what? At the trial court level, we're winning by and large. Most of those cases, when they're finally heard, they're saying, oh, you've got to rehire those people you fired on the Valentine's Day massacre. Now, it's clumsy because it sometimes takes a while, and then are all those people available to be hired back, et cetera. But we gotta keep to the rule of law. And when he violates it, when he overreaches, we need to make sure that we go into court. There's some that we can do to fight back in Congress. You know, Republicans, the same party as the president, control both houses of Congress. So that makes it challenging. But we have had just a couple of early glimmers of hope where in the Senate, a handful of my Republican colleagues have voted with the Democrats to stand up to this administration. Now, we need to see a lot more of this, and people can help by making sure that when you call me, also call Ron Johnson, and you know, and also call your House member, whether Democrat or Republican. But by way of example, the tariffs, a lot of people think that there was a huge overreach with regard to the tariffs. And we had a vote in the Senate to get rid of the emergency declaration that President Trump used to justify his tariffs with Canada, a huge trading partner.
Right.
In fact, Wisconsin's number one trading partner. We actually won that vote. And unfortunately, the House didn't take it up. But we got to build on that. You know, that we found a few Republicans who are willing to stand up to the president. We need to find a few more. We need to rise the pressure. And then it's our constituents. So courts, Congress, our constituents, standing alongside our constituents who are organizing to fight the worst of these actions. And not only the ones that have already been taken, but the ones that we're hearing about that will be taken in the future, like during this budget reconciliation process, these proposed cuts to Medicaid. People are organizing, saying hands off Medicaid. I'm doing a lot of that organizing when I go home, and I have roundtables on that topic and hear from people who rely on Medicaid or who have children with disabilities who rely on Medicaid to be safe and healthy. And so that part is really important also. In states and localities where there are actions that can be taken at the state or local level, that's another way to fight back. And so we have to pull together, and it's Democrats, but it's also independents. And again, those Republicans who have the courage to stand up against this president when he has overreached or become involved in unconstitutional activity or illegal activity.
You know, and we're here in the 8th Congressional District, and we have someone who we don't really know where he is, in Tony Weed. And what's neat is when you come home, you talk to people. What are you hearing from the people of Wisconsin when you talk to them?
Yeah, well, let me before I answer what I'm hearing when I'm at home, I just want to mention that like a year ago, on average, I might get between 50 and 100 calls a day. During this moment, during these first 100 days, it was not at all unusual for us to get over 1,000 phone calls
a day.
Come
on.
I know.
Really?
And I try to track. My staff who are answering the phones, what are you hearing on the phones? And they'll give me like, here are the top five issues that
That's
we're hearing
crazy.
About. And yeah, but you're saying, so what do you hear? So I want to say that I'm hearing also from people who call in or email in, not just the ones who, you know, attend a roundtable, et cetera. And so it varies. Like sometimes it's the outrage of the week. When Doge came into the Treasury Department and stole their Treasury database that has almost every transaction, financial transaction that the United States government participates in, people were terrified. What does that mean? What sort of insights do they have about me? And then when they continued to steal other databases and data, people got worried about their medical information and their social security numbers. And so we got a surge of calls around that by way of just one example. But as I'm traveling the state, I would say two of the key issues right now are protecting and fighting against efforts to steal people's health care away, to jeopardize the Social Security program that people paid into over their lifetime and want to know will be there in their retirement. They also want to know that if they have questions, the phones there will be answered, or that they can get through to somebody to help answer questions or process cases. And so people are talking a lot about that. And then the tariffs. When the president has said across the board, I don't care if you're enemy or ally, adversary or best friend, tariffs across the board. And small businesses started realizing what part of their supply chain, what they sourced from overseas versus domestically. Our farmers who get so much of their inputs from Canada, like their fertilizers and other components, and those who have built up export markets, but now know that with retaliatory tariffs, those are probably foreclosed to them. People were so scared. And, you know, most of the jobs created in America are created by small businesses. And we have so many business leaders in Wisconsin who wonder if they'll survive a trade war.
Right.
And wonder if they'll have to, become smaller and lay people off or raise prices and then maybe have customers who can't afford them anymore. And if this is something that might lead to a recession, then families are going to be worried about their budgets and how far they'll stretch. And they're not going to patronize some of these small businesses like restaurants or bars or, stores where they might buy things beyond the absolute necessities. Mm-hmm. So it has such ramifications.
Yeah, it's really, we got about 45 seconds left. How does this get better? And if, I know we can't say that in 45 seconds, but what do we do?
Well, just people have to know their power. You know, there was a previous Trump presidency and he tried to take away the Affordable Care Act, and people rallied and people wrote and people organized. And alongside our constituents, we won that battle. And we're going to stand up and fight back against so many of these proposals that are outright cruel and harm people. And we're going to try to be as successful as we possibly can while preserving and protecting our very democracy at the same time.
Those little things like that.
Know your power.
Yes.
Know your power. Everyone has power.
That's a special interview with Rational Revolution host Mark Becker and Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin. We'll return with more discussion on the silent epidemic with Pastor Jerry Bader and Brian Briscoe next on Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Take Rational Revolution with you anywhere. Log on civicmedia.us/shows or listen to Rational Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, home of the Big High School Sports Show.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The biggest thing that happens in Wisconsin's state government every 2 years is the state budget. And last week at the state capitol, Republican lawmakers took a step forward in the process by voting out more than 600 measures from Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal. This has become a familiar step in this era of divided government. This is now the fourth budget proposal that Evers has put forward, and each one has been met with a similar fate. Even as this has become the custom, it doesn't have to be this way. Republicans could honestly engage with this budget and debate it on its merits. There are good, smart proposals here on everything from health care to education to child care to environmental protection. And if there are items here they disagree on, make the case. Have the debate. But by voting everything out and starting from scratch, they are letting down the people of Wisconsin they are elected to represent by refusing to have this debate on a very basic level. We should expect better.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Rational Revolution, Pastor Jerry Bader in for Mark Becker. We are talking with Brian Briscoe, friend, founder of Parents Living After Child Estrangement. Those of us, and that includes my wife Ramona and me, have had an adult child estranged. And Brian, in 2022, after that happened in his family, founded PLACE, Parents Living After Child Estrangement. And through his mentorship, his tutelage, we have started a peer support group at Samaritan's Heart Mission Church, Parents Empowered After Child Estrangement, or PEACE. And let's pick up, Brian, with the some of the 12 principles. We won't get through all of them. But we do not indulge in denial. Denial of what? Explain that.
Both ways. Denial of our part in this. We don't indulge in denial of their part in this. One of our early criticisms was that we are an echo chamber and that we do nothing but deny. And I've got to say, I know this is anecdotal, but you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people have been through our groups. If anything, it's the opposite. People come in taking perhaps far more blame than is necessary, than is accurate. You know, again, we got mothers and fathers saying, this happened, it must be me. I'm uncertain, but I must be the epicenter of what caused this. And we frequently see this progression where they start off saying that, and then as they process this through a number of weeks and get input from their peers, they say, well, it's really not that simple. And, you know, for me to have such power and sway over somebody, that doesn't withstand much scrutiny. You know, the times I've wanted to influence them and tried, well, that failed. So they really worry themselves perhaps a bit too much about that. Does that make sense?
It does. And that, if I can just put a word in your mouth, that somewhat self-condemnation. What we noticed in the first session, Brian, is I told people, you know, we saw every emotion: shame, guilt, anger, resentment, confusion. Shame was big. Shame, and again, those who had never spoken of this aloud, you know, that speaks to that shame. And once the spigot opened, Brian, and that's where I was not too quick to cut people off, is they just needed to talk about it. If someone listening to this is like, wow, you know, this happened to me and I didn't know that there was something like this, you know, they're going to, that will be encouraging. But if they hear that, yeah, I'm engulfed in that shame, why wouldn't I feel shame? What's the only way to get an F in parenting is for your child to estrange from you. How do you have specific approaches to dealing with people's shame in this particular topic?
Absolutely. And this comes out of my profession, counseling. You know, if somebody has that negative thought, I'm a failure as a parent or what have you. All right. Remember that shame is feeling bad about what you are. Guilt is feeling badly about what you've done. We certainly get quite a mix of both. But if somebody is saying, I'm a failure as a parent, well, okay, that's a horrible thing. Let's take those thoughts to court. What's the evidence here? Mm. Across your lifespan, across your social connections, across everything that you know, everything you've done, what is the evidence that you're horrible at this? Now, understand, okay, we have any number of parents that I think are below the trauma threshold. I was raised by somebody who was neglectful, abusive, abandoned me. I'm an estranged adult child. I don't think the parents who do that to their children show up, okay? I think we have a bunch of people on a bell curve who made normal mistakes. And the people on the bell curve who made normal mistakes, when analyzing the evidence, the data over the course of their lives, just can't make an airtight argument that they are this sort of failure. Mistakes, yes, but mistakes that rise to the level of we're never talking again, I'm not so sure about that. I think in some instances, it's an overreaction.
Refitting that perspective, how important is that to beginning the healing process?
Oh, it's crucial because, you know, this wonderful neuroplasticity in our brains, the things we think repeatedly reinforce themselves and they effectively become ruts. And when you train yourself to catch this thought and counter it with evidence or counter it with another tool, you can pull out of that rut and that begins that healing process. And it's slow. It's like steering a barge. You know, you ended up going this direction slowly and methodically, and the business of changing it takes work. That's the work of counseling.
And so I kind of skipped over one, and I probably shouldn't have, and we'll double back. We do not dwell in the past. Everything you just talked about, Brian, I spent the first 2 years racking my brain. What did I do? What did I do? What did I do? What did I do? As a pastor, this is something that I deal with in counseling people. If for me, it's a spiritual thing. If you say you have made this decision in your life concerning Christ, you shouldn't have to worry about the past anymore. But whether someone's done that or not, dwelling in the past is never a good idea because we can't change it. But I didn't just dwell in the past. I was an archaeologist of myself. I went and dug into the past. Talk about that.
Well, we call this ambiguous grief. Like, I lost my father a couple of years ago, and I'm certain that at least, you know, in this lifetime, I won't see him again. My father is gone, whereas I have an estranged adult child who's out there. There's this ambiguity of not knowing whether or not we will ever reunite. But that's not the only thing about this that is ambiguous. We deal with the uncertainty. What did I do? Where's the answer? How do the dots connect? And we can make ourselves quite distressed when trying to piece that together. And it makes sense that we go there because we're also trying to learn. What was the mistake? Where did I go wrong? How do I not do this again? And there's a line. There's, you know, normal analysis and trying to figure it out and learn, but then we can cross over into being obsessed with it. And here comes, you know, the negative impact on our thinking and the difficulty that we have pulling out of that.
All right. So, Todd, we just have 1 minute left, period, right, on the show.
Correct.
All right. So then we need to, Brian, the website where they can find place.
It is copingplace.net.
And I encourage that. I'm sending people there that can't make our brick and mortar meeting. But if you want to try shgb.org, shgb.org. Brian Briscoe, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Thank you.
And thanks to Mark Becker for letting me do this.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, Wausau's home for Met and Air on Air.
Maggie Dawn.
At 4:30, I'm joined by Benga Ajilore, a former advisor with the USDA, talking about the threats to rural hospitals posed by the Republican budget reconciliation.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio. WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King, and we have breaking news out of Palm Springs, California, where the FBI says its suspect in yesterday's fertility clinic explosion is believed to be the man whose body was found near the scene of the bombing.
We are fairly confident that that subject is Guy Edward Bartkus, 25-year-old. From 29 Palms.
The FBI's Akil Davis says Bartkus may have been trying to live stream the event. Five people were hurt in what Davis says was an intentional terrorist attack. He says the clinic's embryos were saved.
We were able to save all of the embryos at this facility. Good guys one, bad guys zero.
Davis says they're hoping the public can help them track the bomber's steps before the explosion. It's a partly sunny day in Somerset, Kentucky, where residents are trying to pick up the pieces after a tornado that killed at least 17 people there. Kentucky Emergency Management Director Eric Gibson.